I want to start into a new series, as you're aware of. I take a break from the Proverbs study for a little while, and I want to talk about a very relevant problem that we're facing in our culture today, and a very insidious and dangerous problem. It's an ideology, which I'll call wokeism. It could be probably termed other things as well, but wokeism is kind of an umbrella that encompasses several different ideologies that are all destructive. And so what I want to do, I'm going to spend a number of Bible studies on this. And so I'm just going to go through, first of all, and just kind of show you the lay of the land where I intend to go with this study, just looking at the table of contents. It's not finished yet. The last two sections I really haven't even started yet, and I'm still working on the third one. But the ideologies that would fall under this umbrella of wokeism would be social justice, critical race theory, known as CRT, gender identity, diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI. And you may not even be aware of that, but it's a thing. It's not just three words, but it's actually like a movement. It's a thing out there. And then also ESG, which stands for environmental, social, and corporate governance. And ESG, just to sort of jump ahead a few weeks, just quickly, ESG is the reason why Budweiser, though they're with their stupid transgender promotion of their product, caused them a vicious boycott, lost 25% of their revenue, is down to the 14th favorite beer instead of the first one, and it's still unrelenting. And even though the CEO will say, oh, I take full responsibility, blah, 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 ESG is why he will not say, we were wrong, we denounced this transgender movement, we were fools for doing it, and we are breaking all ties from the transgender movement. It's ESG and the huge investors that use this ESG formula to invest in companies. That's why they won't do that. That's what I think anyway. That's what I've read, and it makes sense. Because why else would a company do something so utterly stupid and totally destroy a multi-billion dollar business for the sake of some freaks that nobody really actually cares about anyway? Everybody pretends like they do, but nobody really cares about them anyway. So, but that's, you know, that's a ways down the road here in this study. So when we talk about social justice, I'm going to talk about that tonight. I'm going to do half of that tonight, half of it next time when I get back here in a few weeks. I'll first define social justice, which I'll do tonight. We're going to look at how the Bible commands fair treatment of all people. So that would be like true social justice, because there's true all of these things, right? I mean, there's true diversity, true equity, true inclusion, there's true social justice, and then there's this other stuff, which is the opposite of it, pretty much. So we're going to look at true social justice in the Bible. We're going to look at the only way to equitably distribute resources in society is through the free market, not through government and things like that. We're going to look at the fact that the only person or entity that has the right to distribute resources is he or it who owns them, because that's what social justice is about. Well, I'll get to what it is, but anyway, I'm just showing you kind of the major points I'm going to cover. We're going to look at how God has ordained that there will be both rich and poor on this earth, and that's never going to change. Jesus said, "The poor you'll have with you always." So no matter what programs they try to institute, no matter how they try to redistribute wealth, that's not going to change the fact that there are still going to be poor people. We're going to look at how the rich are not superior to the poor in God's sight. We're going to look at how God did not ordain a progressive income tax in Israel. Everybody paid like a flat rate, basically. It didn't matter how much money you had. We're going to look at how people have a responsibility from God to help the poor voluntarily when they're able. So it's not that we shouldn't help the poor, but it's that we should help them voluntarily and not be have forced redistribution of wealth, which is what social justice promotes. We're going to look at how poverty will never be eradicated from the earth. And then we're going to look at how wealth redistribution is evil. And then After that, that'll be the first couple of weeks. Then we're going to look at critical race theory. And this one is particularly insidious and probably something that most people know very little about. And before, a year or so ago, when I started to look into it a little bit, I didn't know anything about it either. But it's old. It goes back a long ways, especially the critical theory. Critical race theory is like a derivative of critical theory, and critical theory goes back, I don't know, probably over 100 years ago to the Frankfurt School in Germany, if I remember right. But anyway, I'm going to define what critical race theory is. We're going to look at examples of CRT being promoted in public and private schools. And I want to give you, I'm going to read you a bunch of quotes. I'm going to read you out of a curriculum, a math curriculum, in a public school system. And I think it's in the state of Oregon, but it's everywhere. And if it's not here yet, it will be. It'll be coming because it's being promoted at the highest levels. It's being promoted right up at the biggest teachers unions in the country. I forget the name of it now, but anyway, the big teacher union. If you've heard of it, I can't remember the name. But anyway, we're going to look at how there's only one race of human beings. So this whole idea of racism and, you know, one race being superior to another, and therefore we have to compensate for that, and all this stuff, and there's no such thing as different races of people. There's one race, humans. We're going to look at how variations in characteristics within the human family are a fact, not a social construct. That's one thing that CRT teaches, is that this is just a human construct, that there are differences among us, which is not true. There are variations of characteristics. And that's a fact. I mean, there are some people are black, some people are white, some people are tall, some are short, some are fat, some are thin, some are smart, some are dumb. People are just different, and that's a fact. So to say we're all the same is just stupid. We're going to look at racial distinctions, how they have no bearing on a person's relationship with God. We're going to look at how the Bible does not forbid interracial marriage. So the Bible is not a racist book, like some people think it is. It never has forbidden interracial marriage, even back in the Old Testament. We'll look at an example of that. We're going to look at discrimination, and that's an evil, bad word, according to people in this world. But we're going to look at how discrimination, the good and the bad of it, that there's good discrimination, there's bad discrimination, and anybody that never discriminates is a total fool. I mean, if you never discriminate, then why wouldn't you just draw mechanics out of a hat and take your car there to have it worked on, right? You're going to find the best one, right? You're going to discriminate. You're going to find some guy that's really good at working on cars and take your car there, right? You're not just going to willy-nilly go about life, right? Just by chance, you're going to make decisions based on data that you come across. Well, that's called discrimination, making a difference between things. And then we're going to talk about how we overcome unjust discrimination due to bigotry and racism. So if a person or a class of people is discriminated against unjustly just because of their so-called race or because of some ethnicity that they have, I'm going to talk about how you would go about overcoming that. And lots of people have. There's been successful people that have been in minority groups that have been legitimately discriminated against for no good reason, and they have overcome that. So I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about the absurdity and the immorality of reparations, because reparations is, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but it's big in the news. California's been throwing around the idea of reparations to the tune of, I think it's like $5 million per black person or something that gets reparations for slavery that happened to his forefathers, which the funny thing is probably who knows how many black people in California don't even have ancestors that are slaves, and how many white people in California don't have ancestors that were slaveholders, and the whole thing is completely absurd. I'm going to talk about all that, and we're going to have some fun with that. And then we're going to look at gender identity, and this is an extremely perverse one. I'm going to define gender identity, and then I'm also going to define terms that have to do with gender, like gender and sex, and male and female, and man and woman, and his and her, and he and she. And we're going to see that this whole gender identity thing is just an assault against language, common sense. It's just absolutely ridiculous. If you just had a dictionary, you would know that this whole ideology is just absolutely bankrupt. We're going to look at from the Bible how there are only two genders. We could also just use our own common sense, our own two eyes. We could look at DNA. You could, you know, you don't really have to do much studying at all to figure that out. We're going to look at how God defines gender roles, how God hates transgenderism, and he does, and I'll give you verses that just flat out say that he hates transgenderism. And then we're going to look at how the fact that affirming foolish, childish tendencies rather than lovingly correcting them is evil, because that's what this gender identity movement preaches at the highest levels, at the American Medical Association, at all of the highest societies, medical societies, psychological societies, all of them, they all push this gender-affirming care, they call it. And if your child thinks that he is a girl, then you don't try to talk him out of that lovingly. You have to affirm that. And you have to go along with that and do whatever he wants. And we're going to look at how that's evil. That is absolutely evil. That would be probably the worst form of child abuse, the worst form of hating your children you could possibly do is to do something like that. The loving thing would be to correct them and to lead them into the truth. Now we're going to look at how mutilating children is evil, which is what these transgender people are doing, and the doctors. We're going to look at these damnable smartphones and social media and how they're fueling the transgender craze. And I can guarantee you, there would be a way to prove this. You could do studies. I would be willing to lay down huge money that if there were no internet, no smartphones, no social media among children, there would be no transgender craze. I would lay down huge money on that bet. We're going to look at peer pressure and bad influences at school, and how this plays into this transgender movement. And then we're going to look at how schools are pushing for and facilitating transgenderism in children. And then I'm also going to give you a little gender ideology glossary and just go through some of the terms that you're probably not familiar with. And just so when you hear them, you'll know what they are referring to, because some of them are almost counterintuitive. Like, if, for instance, a trans woman, you'd think is like a woman who's trans. No, a trans woman is a man who thinks he's a woman and dresses like a woman, and that's a trans woman. So the whole thing is super confusing, and so I'm going to talk about some of that stuff too. And then we'll, like I said, talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and then environmental, social, and governance, the ESG stuff. Okay, so let's get to defining what wokeism is. Now, I have a little treat here for you. As I was reviewing this just before I came over here, I was looking at the definitions, and I thought, you know, I didn't look up woke in the Oxford English Dictionary, because obviously the modern usage of woke is not going to be in there. It actually has been added to it in 2017, but it's not in the original dictionaries like I have. And so I just didn't think there was any point to even look up woke. And then I thought, you know, I should just look in the OED just to define woke, just to see if it is in there and just see what it says. And I added it to the outline afterwards. This is fascinating. Fascinating. So woke. This is so apropos. These definitions are like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old, right? Woke means weak in various senses. Pliant, flexible, lacking in strength, vigor, endurance, or courage, inferior physically or morally, lowly in status or degree, insignificant. I couldn't come up with a better definition of woke if I would have tried. That perfectly describes these weirdos out there. that subscribe to this ideology. Wokely, the adverb, is weakly, feebly, or poorly. And then wokeness is weakness, debility, lowliness, inferiority. Yeah, I thought that was fascinating. I was so glad that it crossed my mind to look up that definition. Okay, now I'm going to give you some modern definitions, and this is how it's used today. So woke, this is according to Merriam-Webster.com. Woke, the adjective, is aware of and actively attentive to important societal facts and issues, especially issues of racial and social social justice. And then here's one from dictionary.com for woke. It says, woke means being conscious of racial discrimination in society and other forms of oppression and injustice. In mainstream use, woke can also more generally describe someone or something as being, quote, with it, unquote. This is another quote from dictionary.com. Where does woke come from? Figurative woke means being socially and politically awake or aware. Starts in, emerging in Black English. I put a little sick there because that is a direct quote. I think they meant probably started emerging in Black English, or I don't know what they meant, but anyway. In Black English at least by the 1940s. A 1943 article in The Atlantic quoted a Black United Mine Workers official from 1940 playing with woke in a metaphor for social justice. Quote, waking up is a damn sight than going to sleep, but we'll stay woke up longer. I think he needs to go back to grammar school, but anyway. By the 1960s, woke could more generally mean, quote, well-informed, unquote, in Black English. But it's still strongly aligned with political awareness, especially in the context of the civil rights movement in the 1950s and 1960s, and appearing in the phrase, stay woke. The term was notable enough to prompt a 1962 New York Times article commenting on Black slang titled, If You're Woke, You Dig It. So this phrase goes back almost 100 years, like to the 1930s, and I'll give you a quote here from Wikipedia that says that. So it's new to us, I think. I mean, it was new to me. I hadn't heard this word being used like this, and only in recent years, but it goes way back, come to find out. This is a quote from Wikipedia. It says, woke is an adjective derived from African-American vernacular English, AAVE, meaning, quote, alert to racial prejudice and discrimination, unquote. Beginning in the 2010s, it came to encompass a broader awareness of social inequality, such as sexism, and has also been used as shorthand for some ideas of the American left involving identity politics and social justice, such as white privilege and slavery reparations for African Americans. That's why I said that CRT, critical race theory, is under the umbrella of woke, so is gender ideology. These are all part of that. The phrase stay woke has history in AAVE, that's the African American Vernacular English, as far back as the 1930s, in some context referring to an awareness of the social and political issues affecting African Americans. The phrase was uttered in lyrics of recordings by Leadbelly in mid-20th century and post-millennium by Erica Badu, whoever that is. The term emerged in the 2010s, and interestingly, it meant not only racial consciousness, but also that of gender, as well as other discriminated identities originally in the American context. During the 2014 Ferguson protests, you'll probably remember that out in St. Louis, the phrase was popularized by Black Lives Matter, BLM activists, seeking to raise awareness about police shootings of African Americans. After seeing use on Black Twitter, the term woke was the term woke was increasingly used by white people, often to signal their support for BLM. which some commentators have criticized as cultural appropriation. If you're not familiar with cultural appropriation, I wrote out the definition here. It is the adoption, usually without acknowledgement of cultural identity markers from subcultures or minority communities, into mainstream culture by people with a relatively privileged status. Can you read my own writing? If you start talking like another minority group or acting like another minority group or trying to adopt their culture in some way, that's cultural appropriation. Initially, this wider adoption spread primarily among the young or the millennial generation, as all stupid things do. That was my words. As it spread internationally, the term was added to the Oxford English Dictionary in 2017. By 2020, however, members of the political center and right wing in several Western countries were using the term woke in an ironic way as an insult for various progressive or leftist movements and ideologies perceived as overzealous, performative, or insincere. In turn, some commentators came to consider it an offensive term with negative associations to those who promote political ideas involving identity and race. Since then, derivative terms such as woke washing or woke capitalism were coined to describe, for example, companies who signal support for progressive causes as a substitute for genuine change. That's from Wikipedia's article on woke. This is also in that article, a bit farther down. It says, while the term woke initially pertained to issues of racial prejudice and discrimination impacting African Americans, it was appropriated by other activist groups with different causes. While there is no single agreed-upon definition of the term, it came to be primarily associated with ideas that involve identity and race, and which are promoted by progressives, such as the notion of white privilege or slavery reparations for African Americans. And you hear all the time about white privilege and reparations as well. Vox's Adja Romano writes that woke evolved into a, quote, single word summation of leftist political ideology centered on social justice politics and critical race theory. By 2019, opponents of the progressive social movements were often using the term mockingly or sarcastically, implying that wokeness was an insincere form of performative activism. British journalist Stephen Pohl comments that the term is used to mock, quote, over-righteous liberalism, unquote. In this pejorative sense, woke means following an intolerant and moralizing ideology. So for the purpose of this study, I'm going to use, Mr. or Mrs., I'm not sure, Adja is a male or female name, I don't know. But anyway, I'm going to use Mr. Romano's definition of woke, and that is a single word summation of leftist political ideology centered on social justice politics and critical race theory. So like I said, under the ideology of, or under wokeism, you have an array of ideologies under that umbrella of social justice, critical race theory, gender identity, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and environmental, social, and corporate governance. So let's start by looking at social justice. And like I said, we'll get a little way through this and then finish it up, Lord willing, next Bible study. So let me define social justice for you here. This is from dictionary.com. Once again, if you think about social justice and you just think about the words, you'd probably have an idea in your head that is not what these other people mean when they say social justice. Social justice is fair treatment of all people in a society, including respect for the rights of minorities and equitable distribution of resources among members of a community. See, the first part of it's fine. Fair treatment of all people in society. Yeah, who could be opposed to that? Including respect for rights of minorities. Who would have a problem with that? But here's where they really drop their cookies. And equitable distribution of resources among members of a community. Now, I don't have a problem with an equitable distribution of resources, depending on how you define equitable. I think resources ought to be distributed equitably. If you work, you get resources. If you don't, you don't. If you work harder, you get more resources. If you work less, you get fewer resources. If you're stupid and work stupidly, you get less resources. If you're efficient and wise, you get more resources, right? So, yeah, I've got no problem with that. But that's not what they're talking about. Here's a quote from Wikipedia. Social justice is justice in terms of the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. You don't distribute opportunities, right? You don't distribute privileges. Nobody should have privileges in a society. I guess you may earn a privilege or something, but you don't distribute privileges. You don't distribute opportunities. You just let people go out there and do what they want, and they earn what they earn based on what they do. But I'm getting ahead of myself. In Western and Asian cultures, the concept of social justice has often referred to the process of ensuring that individuals fulfill their societal roles and receive their due from society. But that's not what these weirdos are talking about either. In the current movements for social justice, the emphasis has been on the breaking of barriers for social mobility and creation of safety nets and economic justice. Social justice. Now, when they say economic justice, they're not talking about how people should not be robbed by governments who want to steal their wealth and give it to other people, right? Economic justice would be like saying, you can't do that. You can't steal people's stuff and give it to somebody else. That's economic justice, but that's not what these people are talking about. Social justice assigns rights and duties in the institutions of society, which enables people to receive the basic benefits and burdens of cooperation. Written like a true communist. The relevant institutions often include taxation, social insurance, public health, public school, public services, labor law and regulation of markets to ensure distribution of wealth and equal opportunity. Now, social justice is another term for something else. Does anybody have any idea what that other term might be?
Socialism.
That's right. Social justice is socialism. That's exactly what it is. It's just another term for socialism. Taxation, social insurance, public health, public school, public services, labor law regulations, all distribution of wealth, it's socialism. It's top-down government control, trying to control the economy, taking care of people from cradle to grave and all this stuff. It's socialism. That's all it is. Now, the Bible, of course, supports the idea and teaches the idea of fair treatment of all people. So that was the very beginning of the definition of social justice. Fair treatment of all people in a society, including respect for minority, for the rights of minorities. Now, the Bible affirms that, but that's not what they're talking about. But let me just show you here. We're finally going to get into the Bible. Let's see that the Bible does indeed command the fair treatment of all people. We are not to be respecters of persons. In other words, we're not supposed to show favoritism in judgment to anybody. Rich, poor, people of status, people of no status, male, female, it doesn't matter. We're not supposed to show favoritism in judgment. Deuteronomy 1:16 and 17. It says, and I charged your judges. This is the Lord speaking through Moses. And I charged your judges at that time, saying, hear the causes between your brethren, and judge righteously between every man and his brother, and the stranger that is with him. Ye shall not respect persons in judgment, but ye shall hear the small as well as the great. Ye shall not be afraid of the face of man, for the judgment is God's, and the cause that is too hard for you, bring it unto me, and I will hear it. So this is Moses' instruction to the judges of Israel. And what he said there to them is that they were not supposed to respect persons. They weren't supposed to show favoritism. to the small or to the great, to the rich man that comes up for judgment or to the poor man that comes, to the young child or to the old man, to the man or the woman. It doesn't matter. You don't show favoritism in judgment. You've probably seen the pictures of the statue of justice, and she's got the balance in her hands, and she's blindfolded, right? Mm-hmm. Justice is supposed to be blindfolded. Justice shouldn't, it should, the what the person looks like, their status, their wealth, none of that should make any difference. It's the law and the facts and then the judgment. What does the law say? What did this person do? Did the person break the law? Did the person keep the law? If the person broke the law, it doesn't matter who he is, he gets punished. It doesn't matter if he's a government ruler, if he's a king, if he's a priest, it doesn't matter. That is true social justice. Now let's look at Deuteronomy 16, 18 through 19. But that is anything what these social justice warriors want. They want affirmative action, right? The Supreme Court just struck down affirmative action in universities for their admissions, specifically Harvard, I think it was Harvard, and a university in North Carolina, but it would apply to all universities. That's not justice. It's not justice having affirmative action and quotas that say that a certain amount of black people have to be admitted and a certain amount of Asian people and a certain amount of white people, and we have to have a representative number. If black people are 12% of the population, then they have to be 12% of Harvard. That's not justice. Justice is, look at the test scores. Look at the person's academic credentials, and the people with the academic credentials that meet the qualifications get let in. If there's not a black person that meets the credentials, tough luck. If the whole school's made up of Asians because they're smarter than the rest of us, tough luck. Who cares, right? That's just the way it is. Affirmative action is wicked. It should be based on merit. It shouldn't be based on skin color. See, they don't believe in social justice. They believe in the opposite. That is injustice. Can you imagine being the kid that spent your whole middle school and high school working diligently and studying while the rest of your friends were goofing off, and you had wonderful grades, you had a 1600 on the ACT or the SAT, and you put in your application to Harvard, and some bum got in ahead of you just because he's black or he's Mexican or he's some other so-called race? That's evil. That's totally evil. And not to mention, it's evil for the black kid or the Mexican kid or any other kid, it doesn't matter who he is, that got in that doesn't have the merit to get in. Because guess what? He's going to get in and he's going to fail. And then he's going to be kicked out. And then he's going to have wasted his time and his money. And he's going to feel like a failure. He's going to be in there among a bunch of smart kids when he's not that bright. And he's going to feel inferior and he's going to feel stupid. It's not fair to anybody. It's just, it's evil. But anyway, Deuteronomy 16, 18 through 19. And it's not just minorities that don't get into Harvard. I didn't get into Harvard either. I didn't apply, but I wouldn't have wasted my time applying because I wouldn't have got in.
I thought you got in, remember?
Yeah, my wife asked me one time, like, something like, could you have gone to Harvard, or could something about going to Harvard? And I like laughed. I'm like, are you kidding me? Not a chance. I don't even think if I would have really applied myself, I could have gotten into Harvard, but certainly not applying myself, I can guarantee you that. Deuteronomy 16, 18 through 19. Judges and officers shalt thou make thee in all thy gates, which the Lord thy God giveth thee throughout thy tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. Thou shalt not wrest judgment, twist it, manipulate it, right? Ruin it. Thou shalt not wrest judgment. Thou shalt not respect persons, or show favoritism, in other words. Neither take a gift. That's a bribe, right? To let your judgment be perverted because somebody's paying you off. They weren't to do that. For a gift doth blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the words of the righteous. So they were not supposed to allow anything to affect their judgment, whether they like the person, whether the person was influential, whether the person paid them to judge a certain way. They were supposed to just look at the facts, look at the law, and make a just determination. That's what true social justice is. Now let's look at 2 Chronicles 19, 5 through 7. And he set judges in the land throughout all the fenced cities of Judah, city by city, and said to the judges, "Take heed what ye do, for ye judge not for man, but for the Lord, who is with you in the judgment. Wherefore, now let the fear of the Lord be upon you. Take heed and do it. For there is no iniquity with the Lord our God, nor respect of persons, nor taking gifts." You're starting to see a pattern here, right? The Lord repeats it over and over again. No respect of persons, no taking gifts, no perverting of judgment and justice. Let's look at one more in Proverbs 24, 23 through 25. "These things also belong to the wise. It is not good to have respect of persons in judgment. He that saith unto the wicked, Thou art righteous, him shall the people curse, nations shall abhor him. But to them that rebuke him shall be delight, and a good blessing shall come upon them." You know, the Bible says, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put light for darkness and darkness for light." You say to the wicked, "Thou art righteous," that's evil. Right? The Supreme Court takes the case a few years ago with the so-called gay marriage, the sodomite marriage. And they look at a righteous man or a wicked man, some sodomite, and say, "Thou art righteous. You deserve to be married like anybody else," right? And then totally pervert the word, the meaning of marriage, and the institution of it. That's evil. It's not good to have respect of persons in judgment. All people are to be held accountable to keep the law of God and are to be punished equally for breaking it. And a man's not to be left unpunished if he's rich or poor. See, a lot of times I think we think, and this maybe is just because we're compassionate or what, but we think, well, if a person's poor, then he ought to get a break because he's poor. And, you know, we feel bad for poor people. But poor people should not get a break if they break the law, if they break a legitimate, actual law. I'm not talking about all these multitude of laws that we have today, many of which are unjust. But if a poor person breaks a legitimate law, well, then he's broken the law. You can go ahead and turn to Leviticus 19, but let me just turn to Proverbs quickly, to chapter 6. Just something came to mind here. In Proverbs chapter 6, and you'll remember this from the Proverbs series, where he says, in verse 30, "Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he's hungry." There's a poor guy. I mean, he's hungry. He doesn't have anything to eat. Like he's apparently has absolutely nothing. "Men don't despise him if he steals to satisfy his soul when he's hungry." Men will have, they'll have mercy on him, right? But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house. It doesn't say, well, if he's found, well, he's poor. He didn't have anything to eat. No. He's going to give sevenfold. He's going to pay it all back times seven. He's going to give all the substance of his house, which tells me if he's got substance in his house, something's wrong here, because he could have sold the substance of his house for a hamburger or whatever, right? So I'm not sure why he was stealing from other people if he had, you know, something to give. But anyway, you get the point, though. Even though the guy's poor and hungry, you know what? If he broke the law, he broke the law. And it doesn't matter. Now, Leviticus 19 and verse 15. We kind of have two extremes in this country. We have people that think that poor people ought not to be held accountable. I mean, this is getting to be a major, major problem in cities with they call it shoplifting, which is a euphemism, with theft. There are Targets and Walmarts that are closing down, especially on the West Coast, like in Washington and California, Oregon, I think, because the theft is so bad and they're not allowed to do anything about it, and the police are instructed not to do anything about it, and they're literally passing laws not punishing shoplifters. And these big box stores are just moving out of town. They're moving out of the neighborhoods because they just can't stay in business. They're being robbed that much in Walgreens and all kinds of places.
Tell you how many thousands of dollars I write off in a month of theft.
Yeah. And it's
a pet store.
And it's not nearly as bad here as it is out there. I mean, it's happening everywhere. And the idea is, well, you know, these people are poor, apparently. I don't know if they're poor or not. I mean, maybe they are, maybe they're not, but it doesn't matter. Theft is theft. So we want to give poor people a break, but then I think most of us get irritated when they give rich people a break, because rich people get breaks too. Hunter Biden, right? You ever hear about Hunter Biden? I mean, here's a guy that has been laundering millions and millions and millions of dollars with the big guy, you know, his daddy, and had a federal firearms charge, which I don't necessarily even agree with. But anyway, I mean, he committed a felony with buying a firearm when he was a crackhead, which you're not allowed to do. If you're a crackhead, you got to fill out the form. Are you a crackhead? You have to say no, or they won't let you have. Seriously, I mean, if you can't be using illegal drugs to buy a gun. And he commits a felony, which whether he should be punished for it or not doesn't matter, and he gets a slap on the wrist. He gets nothing. But you or I mean, if I happen to drive across the river from Hannibal over to whatever's on the other side in Illinois and forget to take my gun out of my pocket and unload it and lock it up in a locked container in the trunk or whatever, do you think I get a slap on the wrist? No, I'd probably go to jail for some little infraction like that. Right? So we get irritated when rich people or famous people get off with nothing. And that's equally wrong. The rich and the famous and the poor and the lowly, none of them should get away with anything. Everybody should be judged according to the same law and punished if they break the law. True, just laws, that is. Anyway, Leviticus 19 and verse 15. Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. But in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbor. So you don't respect the person of the poor. You don't show favoritism to a poor person or to a mighty person, which is a rich person in this context. So either one. If you got some guy comes up before the judgment seat in rags and he just went and slugged somebody across the face because he got mad, well, he gets the same punishment that Bill Gates comes to the judgment seat and slugs somebody across the face because he got mad. It doesn't matter whether it's a guy in rags or whether it's a billionaire. They both should get the same punishment. Neither should be left off the hook. A poor man is not to be looked upon with favor just because he's poor. Exodus 23:3-6. Because when you do that, you're going to get more of the bad behavior. When you subsidize something, you get more of it. So if you allow and enable and don't punish bad behavior, you're going to get more of it. And that's why these cities are spiraling out of control, because they are not enforcing laws. And these cities, especially on the West Coast, are in horrible, horrible shape. Exodus 23:3-6. It says, neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause. Down in verse 6, thou shalt not wrest the judgment of thy poor in his cause. Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause. Countenance means to look upon with sanction or favor. To favor, patronize, sanction, or encourage. You don't look upon the poor in his cause with encouragement or favor when he's done wrong. Right? If he's broken the law, it doesn't matter. If he's poor, you don't sanction that. You don't encourage bad behavior and evil. Let me just give you another example in the Bible. And that is that masters and servants are both under obligation to obey the word of God. It, the Word of God didn't say, well, you know, you're a servant, you're a slave, therefore you get a pass because, you know, it stinks to be a slave. No. You know what it tells slaves in the Bible? Obey your masters. You know what it tells masters? Treat your slaves well, your servants well. Ephesians 6, 5 through 9. Ephesians 6, 5 through 9. Servants. Now, this could be bond servants, slaves, or this could be wage servants. The Bible talks about both of them. A bond servant and I forget the term the Bible uses for it, but anyway, a man that would be working for you. He would be under contract to work for you for a certain period of time, and you'd be paying him. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling in singleness of your heart as unto Christ. See, they're told to obey, not to despise, but to obey their masters. Not with eye service as men pleasers, not just when they're not just when the master's looking, right? Not just trying to do good just when he's paying attention, but as the servants of Christ doing the will of God from the heart. With good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. So God doesn't set the master up on a pedestal and just say, hey, you're the master, you can do whatever you want, you can mistreat this guy. And he doesn't say, oh, you're the slave, therefore you ought to be pitied and you ought to be given a free pass and you can do whatever you want because you're in a really sad situation. He doesn't do that at all. He says, obey your masters, and masters, you treat them well. And God is basically not expecting us to do anything that he doesn't himself do. God punishes all equally for sin, regardless of their race, gender, or status. Let's look at Romans 2, 5 through 11. Romans 2, 5 through 11. Romans 2 and verse 5. But after thy hardness and impenitent heart, treasurest up unto thyself wrath against the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God, who will render to every man according to his deeds. Every man. That's rich, poor, male, female, young, old. Doesn't matter. Black, white, Asian, Mexican. God doesn't care. He renders to every man according to his deeds. To them who by patient continuance in well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life. But unto them that are contentious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish upon every soul that doeth evil, of the Jew first and also of the Gentile. But glory, honor, and peace to every man that worketh good, to the Jew first and also to the Gentile. So whether it's the Jews, which are God's chosen people for hundreds and thousands of years, or whether it's the Gentiles that were outside of the covenant of Israel or the outside of the commonwealth of Israel, God judges them all according to their works. And look what it says there in verse 11. For there is no respect of persons with God. God does not show favoritism in his judgment, even with his own redeemed children. You know, it says in Ezekiel, it says if the righteous man do wickedness, that none of his righteousness will be remembered, and he'll die for his sin. And if the wicked man repents, then none of his wickedness will be remembered, and he'll be spared. Right? So God, even with his own faithful children, you can do 100% right up until the end of your life, and then just decide that you're just going to live in willful sin. And God's going to judge you like you didn't do anything good your whole life. He's going to judge you for what you did at that moment, regardless of all the good things that you've done prior to that. There's no respect of persons with him. Colossians 3 and verse 25. Colossians 3, 25. It says, but he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there's no respect of persons. And this is talking about God, God's judgment here. And God expects us to do the same thing. Not to show favoritism. 1 Peter 1 and verse 17. 1 Peter 1 and verse 17. And if ye call on the Father, who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear. God doesn't show favoritism. He just looks at a man's work. He looks at what a man does, and he judges accordingly. So how many verses there that say about no respect of persons? Both us and God. I've probably read at least a half a dozen of them, it seems like. That is true social justice. But that's not what these people are talking about. Not at all. We should not give preferential treatment to the rich, especially in the church. Let's look at James 2, 1 through 9. Sometimes the rich do get off easy because, they can buy their way. They can buy justice, for one thing. And the other thing is, people just like hanging out with them and spending time with them. And if they, give them a pass, then maybe they'll be invited over to their parties or, get some kind of a benefit or a kickback or something. But we never, ever want to do that, especially in church. God forbid that we'd have some wealthy person come in and then just like, I know you're living with your girlfriend, but we're just not going to say anything about that because you are putting a couple grand a month in the box or whatever. That should never, ever happen. James 2, 1 through 9. My brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. For if there come unto your assembly a man with a gold ring in goodly apparel, and there come in also a poor man in vile raiment, and ye have respect to him that weareth the gay clothing, and say unto him, Sit thou here in a good place, and say to the poor, Stand thou there, or sit here under my footstool. Are ye not then partial in yourselves, and are become judges of evil thoughts? Brethren, or hearken, my brethren, let me try it a third time. Hearken, my beloved brethren, hath not God chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom, which he hath promised to them that love him? But ye have despised the poor. Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? Do not they blaspheme that worthy name by which ye are called? If ye fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, ye do well. But if ye have respect of persons, ye commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors. So they had apparently a problem in this church. And the Jews did like money, right? And this is a Jewish church, right? James was one of the apostles to the Jews. I presume he's writing to a Jewish church anyway. And he was the presiding, I think it was this James that was the presiding elder of the church in Jerusalem. They had people that would come there that were rich. And a rich guy comes in and they say, hey, take this seat right up here in the front, or take this nice seat. And if there happened to be a poor guy in that seat, move to the back, right? Or sit here under my footstool. Well, that's wrong. You see, in Christ, men and women of all ethnicities and social stations should be treated equally as it pertains to loving them and keeping God's commandments toward them. Let's just look at a few verses here. Galatians 3 and verse 28. Galatians 3:28. Now, when I say treated equally, I don't mean everybody has to equally be your closest friend in the church. Obviously, that's not ever going to happen because people are different. Some people just connect and get along with some people better than others. It's just the way it is. Everybody ought to be treated equally as it pertains to loving them and keeping God's commandments toward them. That's the key. Galatians 3:28, it says, For there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither bond nor free, there is neither male nor female, for ye are all one in Christ Jesus. So in Christ, it doesn't matter what your nationality is. Jew or Greek, black or white, Asian, Latino, it doesn't matter what you are. And it also doesn't matter if you're bond or free. In these days, whether you're a slave or whether you are a master, or today, whether you're a wealthy company owner or you're an entry-level employee at that company. It doesn't matter in Christ. None of that matters. And it doesn't matter if you're male or female. The law applies equally to both, right? God, we don't, you know, just because women are nicer and softer and sweeter, sometimes anyway, than men, it doesn't matter. You break the law, you break the law, right? Women get excluded from the church just like men do if they do sinful things. We don't show respect to persons. Galatians 5 and verse 6. It says, "For in Christ Jesus neither circumcision availeth anything nor uncircumcision, but faith which worketh by love." See, that's the only thing that matters, faith that works by love. Now, let me show you by comparing a couple of verses here what this love is. Is this that wishy-gushy feeling, or is it something else? Let's look at 1 John 5 and verse 2. The Bible will define for us here what this faith which worketh by love is. This is true love. 1 John 5 and verse 2. "By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep His commandments." That's how we not only love God, but how we love the children of God. Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." That's pretty obvious. That's how you show him you love him. But that's also how we show each other that we love each other, by keeping God's commandments. You realize that? That's an act of love toward each other if we keep God's commandments. Because some of those commandments tell us how to live toward each other, for one thing. And the other thing is, if you live a righteous life according to God's commandments, you are showing love to God and you are showing love to your brethren by your love for God. Turn to Romans 13, 8 through 10. So if you ever want to tell me, "Pastor, I love you," and people tell me that sometimes, but you know how you can show me that? Just keep God's commandments. I know you love me if you keep God's commandments. Right? If you're not keeping God's commandments, you say, "Oh, I love you, Pastor." I don't believe you. Because if you love me, you'd keep God's commandments. Right? Romans 13, 8 through 10. "Owe no man anything but to love one another. For he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. For this thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." That one covers them all. If you love your neighbor as yourself, you won't do any of those things to him that we're forbidden to do. "Love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law." So that's how you... That's when Paul talked about faith which worketh by love. It's the keeping of God's commandments. That's the true love. One more, Colossians 3 and verse 11. Colossians 3, 11. "Where there is neither Greek nor Jew, nor circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Christ is all and in all." So, in a couple of different ways here, the Bible's telling us nationality, so-called race, ethnicity doesn't matter. It just doesn't. Greek or Jew, barbarian or Scythian, doesn't matter. All this talk about race, and they've created this race problem. There used to be a race problem in this country, obviously. Older people, you guys would probably remember that. You lived in that era with all the Jim Crow laws and all that stuff. I mean, there was true, legitimate racism in this country, and there was a lot of hatred and animosity towards black people. But you know what? In my generation, there was very, very little of that. I mean, there was still a little bit here and there, but very, very little. But it's amped back up again, and they've caused it. That didn't come about just by chance. They have pitted us against each other and tried to cause these racial divisions, and it's evil. And the same people that are clamoring for social justice are the same people that are causing this division between the two of us, and they're calling it social justice. It's class warfare. And they want to take from one class and give to another class, and that creates animosity between classes. And then they claim to want, you know, to bring us all together. I mean, it's perverseness. They're doing the exact opposite of what they claim to do, to want to do. I think, honestly, you have to teach people to be racist. Because you take little kids, like little black kid, little white kid, they'll play together. They don't care. I mean, the white kid may look and say, why is he black? Why is his skin black or something? Just curious. But he doesn't care. They play with each other. It doesn't matter to them. You got to teach people that kind of stuff. All right, let's just look at one more thing here. So the big part of social justice is this equitable distribution of wealth. Right? So the only way to equitably distribute resources in society is through the free market. And that is, those who work and earn money or goods are entitled to them. That's how you equitably distribute. There's no other way to do it equitably. The only other way to do it would just be having some person decide who gets what, and that's never going to be equitable, because all people in a society are not going to work equally hard. They never are. And how are you going to determine what is equitable unless you give everybody the exact same amount? And that's not fair, right? That's not equity, because some people are going to work way harder and they deserve more. And so how would you give them what's fair and equal? It would be based on what he does. That's the only fair and equal way to do it. Proverbs 27 and verse 18. Proverbs 27 and verse 18. It says, whoso keepeth the fig tree shall eat the fruit thereof. So he that waiteth on his master shall be honored. Whoso keeps the fig tree eats the fruit. It doesn't say everybody gets a piece of fruit. Right? It says if you keep the fig tree, you get the fruit. You get all the fruit. You plant the tree, you water the tree, you trim the tree, you purge the tree, right? You do all that, you get the fruit. It's wrong for somebody to come to your fig tree and say, well, you've got all this fruit, and your neighbor doesn't have any fruit, and therefore we should make everybody equal, so every one of your neighbors should get some fruit. Well, they should have planted their own fig tree, and they should have kept their own fig tree, and then it had fruit. If you want fruit, you keep your fig tree. Now, that seems really simple. Just apply it to the whole welfare system, the whole welfare state, the whole we pay people not to work. We tax the rich and give it to the poor, right? That's evil. It's the same thing. It's the same principle. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 7. The Bible teaches that you're entitled to what you work for, and only that. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 7. Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not the fruit thereof? Or who feedeth a flock and eateth not the milk of the flock? Who plants a vineyard and doesn't eat it? Right? You plant the vineyard, you eat the fruit of it. You keep the flock, you eat the milk of the flock. It's yours. It's your private property. You worked for it. You own it. You get to use it how you want. On the other hand, those who are lazy and do not work are not entitled to anything. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10. This is true social justice. You work, you're benefited by it. You don't work, you don't get anything, and you starve. That is true social justice. And I imagine if we had that system in this country, nobody would starve. I've never met a person, I don't think, I can't imagine there's a person out there that would starve to death because he refused to work. Now, he might steal or something. He'd do something, but he's going to do something, right? I guess that is a problem. You'd have to have a police force if you're going to have that kind of a system. But, you know, God makes provision for things like that, too. Anyway, 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10. You wouldn't have these 7 million young male bums out there not working today if you enacted these policies, these biblical policies in society. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, "For even when we were with you, we commanded you that if any would not work, neither should he eat." That says would not. It doesn't say cannot. Right? Somebody cannot work. That's different. Right? That's where charity comes in. But any would not, like he will not. He could, but he won't. You don't work, you don't eat. Proverbs 13 and verse 4. Proverbs 13 and verse 4. "The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent should be made fat." You see, the sluggard, the lazy guy, oh yeah, he desires just like everybody else, but he should get nothing. And the soul of the diligent should be made fat because he worked and he deserves it. And the guy that didn't doesn't deserve anything. Proverbs 19 and verse 15. "Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger." That's the way it's supposed to work. Now we give them food stamps or an EBT card. But that's not the way it's supposed to work. Proverbs 21 and verse 25. "The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor." It kills him, but I don't think it would actually kill him. Like, it kills him inside. Like, he really doesn't want to work. But if it comes down to it and he gets hungry enough, he will work. See, we've broken the link between work and eating. And that's the problem. "So those who work to produce goods or services are recompensed for their labor either by their employers or their customers." Their employers if they work for somebody else, their customers if they're self-employed. "The more productive a man is, the greater the portion of available wealth he is entitled to. The less productive a man is, the lesser the portion of available wealth he's entitled to." It's just as simple as that. Now, what if you're not as smart as somebody else? Well, you're probably not going to have as much stuff as somebody else does, all things being equal. Now, sometimes people that aren't all that bright make up for it when working really hard, right? And you can do that. What if you're not as strong as somebody else and you just can't physically do what other people can do? Well, you're not going to have as much, but that's just life, right? You get whatever you earn. And that's the way it should be. "Every man must get it through his head that nobody owes him anything unless he's worked for it." If we could just learn that, and I think it's so important to drill that into the heads of your children from the youngest age, nobody owes you anything. Braden, nobody owes you anything. The only time anybody owes you anything is if you do work for him and he told you he would pay you for it. Then he owes it to you, but nobody owes you anything if you didn't work for it. We need to ingrain that into the minds of children and adults for that matter. That's why I don't think it's a good idea to give children an allowance, because what you do, and you know, you can do what you want, but this is my opinion. When you give a child an allowance, you are training him up to be a little socialist. You're training him up and teaching him that somebody's just going to give you money for doing nothing just because you exist. I exist, therefore I am entitled to money. No, you're not. You're not entitled to anything. You work for it. And so I am personally a proponent of making children work for the things that they want. Things that they need is another story. Food, shelter, clothing. You provide the things they need. The things they want, you make them work for it. Now, definitely by the time they get to be teenagers, 13, 14, they're old enough to work, to do something, right? And when they're younger than that, even Braden's age, he can work around the house, and you can pay him for doing things that are above and beyond his, you know, his regular chores. Right now, am I going to say if my little one-year-old baby is gooing and gawing for a rattler, and I say, well, let me tell you what, go pick up them sticks in the yard, and then you'll get that rattler? No, right? But when they get to be teenagers and they want things beyond food, clothing, and shelter, buy it. Go work. Mow the neighbor's yard, right? Or mow my yard or whatever. You know, do something above and beyond your normal duties and earn the money and get it. Like, but he's never going to be able to afford that four-wheeler or that motorcycle or that whatever. If he can't afford it, you know, here's a thought. Maybe he doesn't deserve it. Like, if he wants something so expensive that he couldn't work enough to get it, maybe he doesn't deserve it, right? Maybe he should be getting things that he could actually work for and earn and save for and get. So that would be my advice if you don't want to raise a little socialist. Make them work from a young age and realize that if I want things, I must work for it. Because if you think you're going to raise them up, giving them an allowance and giving them everything they want until they get to be 18 or 20 or whatever, and then send them out into the real world, and all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute, I got to work? They're not going to want to work. They're going to call mom and dad and say, hey, I need help because I can't pay my rent. I can't pay my car payment because whatever, you know, because they never learned how to work. So that is the only way to equitably distribute resources is the free market. If you work, you get resources. If you don't, you don't. And to do it any other way is called theft. To give anything to somebody else requires that it's given up of somebody else, and that other person is giving it up against their will, because if it wasn't against their will, you wouldn't have had to take it from them and give it to somebody else, because he would have given it to him on his own. And we'll talk about that later in the next study, Lord willing. So thank you for your kind and patient attention this evening.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.